Hello, I'm your host, Carmen Milagro, and welcome to From the Ground Up. As many of you already know, like most of my guests, I wear a lot of hats. I'm a master certified wellness coach and CBD consultant. I'm the author of Truths About Hemp CBD. I'm the co-founder as well as instructor at CBD University Mexico and the founder at Divina.store. I'm an entrepreneurist and I host this show because most people start from the ground up. We're dreaming and planning and building that life or that career step by step. Regardless of where you start, when you do start, how do you do it? How do you navigate the challenges that life throws you? How do you avoid making mistakes along the way? Some of my guests are CEOs or they're coaches themselves. They're engineers, they're educators, they're journalists. We have some singers, we have tech gurus. And in today's case, my guest is not only an author, but he also worked at the White House. My guests come from various backgrounds, as you can see, and we have the opportunity and the honor to hear their stories, ask advice, learn from their mistakes, and be inspired. And we talk about all kinds of things, life, family, hope, careers, business, and bad choices. Today, we're going to focus on the journey between recovery and redemption. I'm excited to have with us my friend and colleague, Mr. Henry Lozano, a lifelong nonprofit executive and grassroots organizer who was awarded the Presidential Call to Service Award in 2005 in recognition of a lifetime of service. Henry is a former deputy assistant to the president who was asked by George W. Bush to step into that role as well as the director of the USA Freedom Corps in 2007. As the director, Henry coordinated service and volunteering efforts with organizations ranging from the Peace Corps and AmeriCorps to the Senior Corps. Henry's road to these positions is a very compelling and unique story, and he'll share a part of his life with us right here on From the Ground Up. Throughout his career, he's championed many causes, especially those related to substance abuse prevention as well as recovery programs. Henry Lozano is also the author of a new book called Borderlands, One Man's Journey from Addict to Advocate. Welcome, Henry. Welcome to the show.
What an honor to join you. Good to see you, Carmen.
It's great.
Honor to be here.
Thank you. Likewise, I'm so happy that we are and thrilled that we made this happen.
It's one of those hallelujah.
Yes, it is. Henry, let's jump right in. I have, you know, sort of this premise for the show where we get to really just talk, right? And you and I have known each other for many years. I think if I recall, we met back in 2009, somewhere around there.
That sounds about right.
Yes. And we've had, you know, we've been so lucky to nurture our relationship and to nurture our friendship and to help each other, to run ideas, you know, by each other and sort of have this, you know, I mean, for a while there, we were even meeting like once a month, which I enjoy those meetings so much. But this is a little bit different. This is a little bit of more so that our listeners and our viewers can get to know you and hear a little bit about what you've got going on. So if you don't mind, I'd like to sort of start kind of at the beginning. You know, in the book, you talk about your family, your upbringing, your heritage and ancestry. You don't really hold anything back. Why is this so important to your story, to share so much of your upbringing and, you know, just to share so much of yourself in this book?
Wonderful question. And as I see it, my love of my life, Paulette, and I were just going over all of this over the time period that we knew I was going to have the opportunity to join you. And what was it, you know? And one of the things that I would suggest caused me to become the good person that I was as in the book, it was my father and mother, these two most gracious servants on the planet, and they were that. And dad was a Big Coyote. He ranched thousands and thousands and thousands of acres, and Mom was the community heartbeat. She brought all the women together and did all that kind of great stuff, all in our house. And we lived out on a ranch just outside of the little city of Calexico, California, right on the border of Mexicali, Mexico. And but growing up in that, in those early years, my father put and instilled so much reality of life. The way he treated all the folks that came from across the border to go to work in his fields, to get a paycheck, to go home and feed their families. Right. My dad was out there. My dad, I don't know if you know anything about lettuce pruning, but when lettuce grows in the fields, you just got thousands of heads in a row and you got to keep them trimmed. My dad, when the men were out there trimming the lettuce, which meant they had to bend all the way over to keep walking and cut the lettuce that's growing, that shouldn't be growing in the middle of the two good heads. When my dad saw somebody get behind, my dad was the first guy to get behind that person and say, "Go on ahead. I'll take care of this." That was my dad. The leader of this entire major farming industry out there in the fields with his folks working that had been driven across the border in his bus to go to work in his fields. That was Pops. And it's just a tremendous, tremendous man, a decorated Second World War veteran, just all of that in the bag of chips. And Mom, I think my mother loved chasing me around the house and throwing things at me, because after that was over, she would always laugh and run over and give me a big hug and say, "Oh, tú te voy a agarrar." And that means, for all of you who don't know Spanish, "I'm going to get you." But she was laughing and hugging me. And that was the home that I grew up on and in. And I would suggest that I've done as much for my own children, loved them that same way as my mom and dad loved me, and brought them up. And, I'm so proud of my two boys. They're doing incredible things, business owners, school, principals. They're incredible, both of them. And, but I know the point. The point was, I was captured young enough in my life to not go down that road and end up in a grave somewhere. And just a quick little caption. This is not something to suggest anything other than how lost you can get. As a heroin addict in my house, and I briefly mentioned this before, I had people dying in my house. Dying. And what would we do? Wrap them up, throw them in a trunk, go back to the house and continue the party. I mean, that I don't, to this very day, when I look back at that, I go, how in the world could you be so non-sensitive to life? And you knew that person, right? And they died in front of you. And here you are just going back home and thinking in your mind, "Well, I got to have another fix because I don't want to be thinking about this." That's just sad and very sick. And that's been my life quest since I walked into Teen Challenge so many years ago. Right. It was that capture to walk in as a heroin addict because we had no place else to go. Right. My mother comes out to the car, and my wife and I were in the car, and Mom said, "Before you go, I want to give you some money." And she, I didn't ask for it, but I always knew she would. And she just put $20 in my hand, and back then when I was a young kid, that was a lot of money.
Sure.
And she said, "Before I give you this, I want you to think about something. I was watching TV last night. I seen this public relations piece about Teen Challenge, and they talk like they're helping so many people all over the United States. And she says, you got to go there. She says, I want you to go there. She says, I'm going to call the director of this center, because I got his number off watching that video. She says, I'm going to call him and I'm going to tell him you're coming. And what she actually said also was, mijo, mijo, mijo. And then she said that. And that's a mother's way in Spanish to say, my loved one, my loved one, my loved one, go. And we did, which was a miracle. To this very day, I can't even figure out how in the world, why in the world we did that. And I think one of the reasons, I think I mentioned this just a minute ago, because we were out of dope. And I thought maybe they were going to give us what I knew at that time. Maybe they were going to inject us with their stuff and keep me well and do all that kind of stuff. We got there, knocked on the door, and director came out. And long story short, he said, we got you covered. He said, we're going to take you to Los Angeles Teen Challenge. My men are ready to drive you over there right now. He said,
don't give everything away, Henry. Don't give everything away.
He said, what I want you to know is there's no drugs for you as long as you're with us. And it was a profound moment to think that we both said, let's do it.
Right.
After all those years, somehow there was a moment in time that, as I said, this gracious creator opened our hearts, opened our will, opened our thoughts, and we got there. And here I am today, since 1974.
Henry, this, you know, and again, I shared this with you. You were so gracious to send me a copy of your book. And I've been reading it. And every time, there's two things that happens to me. I'll share this with you. When I start reading it, I can't stop reading it. Mm-hmm. But when I do have to stop, like, you know, to do work and such, I look for the moments where I am not going to be distracted, where I can just fully immerse myself in your story. I mean, you really go from having this amazing family unit. So it's unique in that you didn't come from, you know, as you tell your story in the book, you didn't come from all these broken pieces. That's why you were broken. But you came from this beautiful, loving family, and you're in this new world now of drug addiction and everything. And you are so candid in every chapter that I've read thus far. I'm about halfway through. You are so open and honest and candid. When you decided to write the book, did you ever second guess this decision, knowing that your family, your children, your friends, your business colleagues, they were going to read this book? Did you ever at any point sort of go, oh my gosh, I can't do this?
Good. Great question, actually. And I want to give just one additional entry to this. I bumped into this gentleman that I was at a conference with, kind of shared that with you before. And it was a Christian conference. And he asked me about my life. Come to find out, Gil was a movie maker. And that was his business, to make movies of incredible stories. And that's where that relationship started. And it's continued to grow with he and I and other folks that are doing the books and all of this. It was just incredible. But to look at how quick that transition happened, only because I know I tried to quit. Some people say like 1,000 times, you get to a place where you just know you're worthless. You've seen people die in front of you. You've watched your kids play with their toys under the kitchen table while you're sticking a needle in your arm at the kitchen table. You just finally get a grip that you are lost And you're going to be one of those dead souls, if not human souls, that died from an overdose. And that moment, when I see that coming together in my heart, because of this gracious God that I serve, I believe that all happened on that day on purpose. Everything that happened in my life was there. And I finally came to some sort of, not my own, some sort of awakening inside of me that said, you've got to go now. This was right after my mother. And like I said, like, two kids jumped in the car, and I hate to say it, took enough dope so we wouldn't get sick on the way, right. Went to San Diego and went into San Diego Teen Challenge.
Right.
Now, first of all, what adult's going to go into an organization called Teen Challenge? You know, and I found out it was all adults, you know. Right. Today it's Adult and Teen Challenge, and it's just an incredible opportunity of finding other folks, and that's why I stuck with them. Went up through the ranks, finally became the director of one of the centers.
Right. And yes, and I do want to get to that, but I also want to sort of focus on some of the other, you know, the in-betweens, right? So, and in writing the book, in knowing that everyone was going to hear all of these things that you did that ever, you know, dissuade you? Did you ever feel disheartened? Like, how can I put this out there?
Good question. Yeah. The first ones I went to was my family. So mom and dad, you know, my children. And I asked them all, you know, what do you think? I said, I've got a friend that wants to write this book for me. He's a professional at this. You know, I got a story, and I need to help other folks in their lives. I was clean at this time.
Sure.
Yeah. And well, of course, what are my kids going to say? No, Dad, keep sticking a needle in your arm. And my parents so proud, so happy that their son was on the right track. And from that point forward, my life has been exactly what it's been, to help others trapped in that maze and mess of death.
Right. And we're gonna fast forward a little bit, right? Because we want to cover some of the gamut of not just the book, but just some of the things that you've also done, because I feel like that's where the inspiration can also hit people. You know, we're in 2007, as I mentioned, you know, George W. Bush, he was president, and he asked you to work directly for him as the deputy assistant and the director of the USA Freedom Corps. And I'm taking this question right from your front cover, and I hope you don't mind, but I don't know if you can see this. This copy, it's not, I don't even know if it's out in print yet, but it's going to be soon, right?
Right.
But the question is, you know, again, right directly from your cover, how does a two-time felon get these opportunities? How did you land in these roles? They're pretty high up there, these roles that you were asked to fill. How did that happen?
Obviously, you know, there's two answers to that. Most important one is there was this gracious creator that made all that happen, because it's impossible. I kept thinking when the car, Paulette and I were in the car. We were coming from San Francisco back to the Imperial Valley at that time, where I grew up. And we get this call. And you know, this is the older days, you know, answered the call, and it was the White House. And they just blurted out, the president would like to. And I'm sitting there looking at my wife going, oh my gosh, the president would like to appoint me to be the deputy assistant to him and run a White House office. Now, I knew the president that much. He knew me because of some events that I went to and things that I went up and shook his hand and all those kinds of things. And he was in office, so I worked with his people, you know, so they knew me. he knew me. And when that question came down the pike, it was like, when the answer was yes on his end and yes on my end, I knew right then that life was changing. My whole life was, you can only imagine what my parents thought.
Sure, of course.
They were seniors jumping up and down going, thank God, thank God, thank God. And you know, and my wife, you know, who, by the way, so this is clear, I came out of the addiction. She didn't. After a while, she went back and met what happens to too many people. And I'll just say that we're in a disclosure moment here. Ran away with my best friend, and both of them OD'd and died. Just the tragedy of that kind of destruction with drugs. It doesn't get any clearer than that. You know, it just, you don't stay alive if you're on that road. In other means, I'm just talking about being humanly alive. I mean, alive in your being, alive in your consciousness, alive in your thoughts, alive in your want to do good for others and help, alive that you would have any idea that you know, this gracious creator is moving you on to do some wonderful things.
Right. And also, just to be clear, this was your first wife.
Yes.
Yes. So I just want to make sure, because we had talked about you being in the car when you got the call from President Bush. So I just want to be sure that we're also clear.
My first wife, you know.
Yes.
Tempe was her name.
Right. Henry, when you started working at the White House, when you started, you know, living this incredibly, just, you're so far away from the farm and the fields and, you know, the life of addiction. You are working at the White House. And, you know, we talk about this in our culture, and, you know, our people have talked about this. I've been to seminars and I've listened to people talk about something called imposter syndrome.
Mm.
Have you ever experienced that during, you know, this time when you are working with the president?
Please explain that, because I haven't heard of that. It's imposter syndrome. That sounds interesting.
I hadn't either. That's why I had to really sort of dive in and educate myself on it. And apparently what it is when you don't feel like you belong, like you may be in, you know, a boardroom and you're the only one that looks a certain way, or you may be the only woman in a meeting or a presentation, or you may be the only Latino and, you know, on a team. So it's that feeling of, I don't really quite belong. I'm not really sure how I got here. But that I think what I've learned is that it's almost sometimes a debilitating feeling. And I'm just curious if you ever felt that way. And, you know, for all kinds of different reasons, people feel this. And some, it's a very real thing. But like you, I had never heard of it before. And so that's why I couldn't quite relate to it at the beginning. And now I've attended so many discussions about it. It is very real and very prevalent, not just in the Latino culture, but and people of color, basically.
Mm, interesting. Very interesting. In my reality, only because prior to that ask, I had been serving and volunteering at the federal level already. I was already working with the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration. I was already a vanguard for them out across the nation. And I was doing all of this at my own expense.
Right.
And, you know, when I found something that I could do, I couldn't imagine why I wouldn't want to do it, you know, and stuff like that. So when the White House call came, like I said, in the car, it was just off the cuff. But prior to that, I'd been doing enough to have obviously caught some people's eyes and thoughts and said, you know, this young man could probably do a little bit more than he's doing right now. And, and that's the way we took it. And just right off the bat, when, so that you know, it was almost instantaneously, within a week, I was in the White House. And the gentleman that was running the USA Freedom Corps in the White House, I knew. He just invited me in and said, man, you're going to take over the office. I get it. And he said, here's all the stuff I don't want to do that I'm going to leave just for you. With a big smile.
Well, there you go.
and so that kind of invitation, I was in the White House. And then when the president started posting me in different things, State of the Union, I'm sitting behind the First Lady on purpose. He's talking about drug addicts. I'm the drug addict that he's mentioning, you know. Right. And he's doing all of that. And different events that the president invited me to before he had asked me to take the Freedom Corps position.
Got it.
Everything was so well orchestrated that I just kept seeing that this was going somewhere, and I was so excited. And like I said, then when I got into the White House, and here's a good friend of mine is running the office, he's turning it over to me, he's giving me all the insights and inroads. He says, you're going to have a blast.
Well, there you go. It was meant to be. It was meant to be. And, you mentioned, of course, when you went into the Teen Challenge program, it's a faith-based recovery program.
Right.
Then in 2011, you came full circle. As you mentioned, you were appointed to be the director of the Los Angeles County Teen Challenge, but also the Urban Ministries.
Right.
Now you've gone through all of this, you've been at the White House, and then you step into this role. What was that transition like? Was it just as easy like walking into the White House?
Yes, and for one reason. I created those positions. So there wasn't, in other words, I was a director of a teen challenge in Southern California, and I could create anything I wanted to. So I thought, these are great opportunities to start moving some of this dialogue and presence in realms that I haven't been in yet, but I've done enough of that to understand how to work it. So it wasn't one of those, oh my gosh, the right. White House was an oh my gosh. This was an advance of something that was inside of me to keep moving forward.
Right. I think you and I have talked about this. Now it's coming back to me because I'd forgotten. We had talked about this in the sense of there's a similarity in this conversation, because I think when you and I were talking about it, it was, you know, during the possible startup that I was involved in. But I was talking about how in my career, I was very fortunate enough to create positions for myself. Even within the corporate world, I was able to, because I did, like yourself, would volunteer and just do things. And I would just, you know, I didn't know how to just be quiet and not volunteer to do things. And so, but what I saw as the advantage in the career world was that that ideology of just providing more, adding more value than what was being asked of me, allowed me to create positions within positions that were traditionally, you know, more structured and corporate. I was able to create positions where I had a lot more flexibility to do what I wanted to do. And I remember having this conversation with you. It was a few years ago, and I was in the car. I was in San Francisco. You were in Southern California, and you said, just keep doing that. I remember this, and I appreciate it so much. Let's talk a little bit just from what I'd like to do is sort of, you know, you said that borderlands, you know, one right. man's journey from addict to advocate is really, at the end of the day, if you were to summarize it, you said it's a book about hope.
Yes.
What do you mean by that, Henry? What, in your own words, what does that mean? It's a book about hope.
Hope for others. In other words, family hope, children hope, people in prison and in jail hope, people in Teen Challenge hope. Right now, all of those, you know, from the adults to the adolescents, hope, when extinguished, is your last breath.
That's so profound.
You know, if you, in every situation, if you can't find hope to proceed, to advance yourself or to advance someone else, even as dark as it may look and impossible as it may look, you've missed an opportunity of life. And I see us, you and I both, we've talked about this before, have found ourselves in positions like that where we can help somebody. And today they're doing what? Wonderful things, incredible things. That's how I see all of this. And I've never changed my persona in that direction. I've always seen I can help. And it's what's kept me out in the field. It's what's kept me helping other Teen Challenges spark up across the nation and youth events and youth councils and all kinds of fun stuff that I love to get in the middle of. And it's because to me, I don't understand or don't even care how to spell W-O-R-K.
Right.
This is not work.
Exactly.
This is the most gracious opportunity of a lifetime to be a resource to other people. And to watch them turn around one day and come back to you, give you a big hug with a big smile and say, you did this. That's hope.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Every time we have these conversations, it just renews and reinvigorates what I know to be true just from our conversations throughout the years. And, you know, I do believe in miracles, like yourself. I do believe in miracles. The way that you and I met, some would say was, you know, kind of it was not a great time. It was a huge challenge for me. Let's put it that way. But I always look back on, if I hadn't gone through that process with those certain people's, you know, those certain people with that situation, you know, financial loss, you know, betrayal, all of that. That sounds like a book. All of that. But out of all of that, I met you. And you and I have had conversations, and I'm assuming we're going to resume them again. But we're talking about now going global to help other people. And I've started that in my own journey. But you and I have been talking about creating something together.
Yes.
Maybe. We, you know, we don't have it all done. It's not in execution mode yet. But maybe you could share with us a little bit about how what you've done your entire life to get to this point, writing the book, working at the White House, helping so many other people. Why do you feel that this is a time now to take it even further and out into the world?
To not be too generic, but as a world, we're in an interesting place.
That's a very nice way to put it, Henry.
That's a polite way to put it, of course. And if I just focus in on one capacity or one issue relevant to what we're talking about, there were, you know, it was nothing. We've almost all got used to hearing that 100,000 adults a year are dying from fentanyl and other drug overdoses.
I know.
How about the thousands and thousands and thousands of young people, adolescents, kids in junior high and high school and college that are dying from drug overdoses? What's happening right now is happening globally. And so from my context with looking at what I believe drugs are sorcery on this planet, and what I know that the very last chapter of the book of Revelation says there will be sorcery in that very last verse. It was, and in my context, this was a holy written book. To not believe that was going to happen, not that I had ever willed it to happen, it is happening today. The amount of devastation and life loss in the world is only going to increase. And if there aren't some people like you and me and others that we know that are willing to get in the middle of this mix and help as much as we can, but most important is what you were talking about, that we talked about. Sometimes the individual reference to just helping one here and helping one there is probably the most important thing that could happen in a person's life on both ends. But we both know that you have to create something to hold that. You have to create, let alone the vision, but the ability to create some kind of physical process and organizational structure to move forward that with that at a larger level. I only see it as value. Let's just take you and I. You and I have associations and contacts all over the world.
We do.
And we have the capability of doing something in this moment of time as those kinds of numbers start to increase. I've been trying to prove that. I just saw it. The numbers of adolescent deaths last year were 100,000 themselves. And in other countries, figures beyond that. Most folks don't know what to do with that, Carmen. You and I both know that. They don't know where to go, how to help. And then and it's not just sending a kid into a drug treatment program. It's somehow capturing those before that ever happens, those that are just starting, and working with those that are caught in that horrible, horrible world. Right. We've got to do that.
We do. It's time to start healing.
Right.
And we do that, I think, by healing ourselves, of course, like you've done clearly. But I think that there are so many ways that we can help heal one person at a time, but have the outreach to do it, you know, where they feel like they are a part of a community. And there's so many different ways to do it. There's, like you know, the recovery programs, absolutely. But there's also life lessons that we can share. And we know that music heals. We know that, you know, kindness heals. And if there's a way to, you know, how I dream and how I think of these ideas, we've been talking about them there. I believe there is a way to harness and gather the best of these ideas, the best people to implement them and help create hope.
Yes, I do too. I do too. I agree with you 100%. I agreed with me the first time you said that, because we're in a vacuum right now. The world's in a vacuum for all kinds of different reasons. We don't even have to mark that down. It's in our face every day in the media.
I know.
This happening, that happening. And I'm talking about international events that are happening that are profound. And your thought, and I appreciate you raising that back up, the thought of just one gathering other associations together to create a super organization that's going to have the capacity to do something of influencing and advancing a cause that is usually, and thank God for all those people that are doing it one-on-one.
Exactly.
But giving them recognition for what they're doing, bringing them into a spotlight, showing their story, you know, in public at events and venues, bringing that back to where we're not embarrassed of who we were. We are only embarrassed of what we've done.
Right.
And now's the time to heal our own souls by helping others.
Yes, Exactly. To continue to do that in the different ways that we know how, and by bringing people together instead of constantly dividing them.
Right.
I think you and I, this is why I love having our conversations, and we get to share it this time with our listeners and our viewers. And Henry, this is why I do this. If one person listens to this conversation and is inspired, it's worth it. It's worth it to me every time. And I really am so appreciative of you taking time out to share your story, to talk about your book. And, you know, we are running out of time and I want to be respectful of your day. So if someone were inclined to want to reach out to you or to connect with you or to learn more about Teen Challenge, how do they do that? And when and where will they be able to buy your book?
Good. As soon as the book gets here, I will answer that question. But I know it's soon because it's already done. So we're just waiting for the books to arrive from the publishing company. The point, wow, there's so much going on in my mind right now about that question. The point is, we have to do it. And I'm saying that in a very generic global sense, you know, and you and I, because of your connection associations with people, will be part of advancing that book, but we'll have a context behind it. This isn't about the book, you know, it's about what can be done in a story like that. How can people change in a story like that? How do you end up at the White House in a story like that? It's what and who you're connected to. And because I know I wasn't connected to anybody, there's also a higher power that has a destination for all of us.
Right. Absolutely. And if they are wanting more information about Teen Challenge, is there a website that you would recommend? We can always, of course, when this goes out, I always advise everyone who's been on my show to go back to From the Ground Up on Facebook and input new updated information. So when the book is out, when, you know, all of that, we can put that into the socials.
Excellent. Adult and Teen Challenge. I mean, that's all they got to do is Google it.
Okay, they'll find
it all over the nation, you know, which makes that real operate. And the beauty of this is, this isn't, you know, they walk in, if they don't have a penny in their pocket, it doesn't matter. If they don't have any place to sleep, it doesn't matter. If they've never been counseled by someone, they're there. All of that, which is the basic needs of life, are there to help. And Teen Challenge is just one organization.
Right.
They're all over the place. I see that someday you and I are going to bring some of that together. Not just the people, the organizational structure to do that, but the organizations themselves. Everybody's all, I know we all got to blow our own horns and fly our own flags to do what we got to do, but there needs to be, as you know well, and you told me, a super base. Yeah. And it would be an honor to do that with you. It would be an honor to start it here in the United States and then move across the world, because this is not going to go away.
I know. Thank you, Henry. Thank you again for your time, for your just your candidness. You're so open about your story. You know, it just, I think that in itself is such an inspiration with what you're doing, is you're allowing people to see everything out there. You're not holding anything back. Like I said at the beginning, you are putting it all out there with accountability, with honesty, with transparency. And that, I think, hopefully will also allow other people to do the same.
Yes.
Before I let you go, do you have one last piece of advice? You've given us so much, but just one last piece of advice that you'd like to share with young people who are living in different cultural backgrounds, living perhaps on the reservation, you know, just there's something I think that you can say because of who you are, because of your experiences. And I wonder if there's, and again, you know, we are speaking in generalities here, but just one last piece of advice for young Indigenous kids who are struggling right now.
Yes. What a beautiful thought. All of us have a tradition. And in those traditions, if we could just understand who we are and what we're really here for, and where we could leave a footprint in the earth by someone else that needs to hear that. In Indian country, it's aho, my sister, which means so many things, blessings upon you, life upon you, victory upon you, advancement upon you. Aho, my sister, let's do that.
Thank you, Henry. Thank you for your time. I don't know why that just made me so emotional. Thank you for sharing your life's journey with us. You are truly an inspiration, and I'm happy and honored, and I'm so grateful to call you friend and business colleague. Here's to a brighter future for us all in harmony and light. And thank you all for tuning in. As you've seen once again, okay, sorry. You know, there's really no excuses for a reason or reasons stopping you from becoming successful and changing the world and being the better version of yourself. I wish you all good fortune, and I hope that you continue to build on your knowledge base, build on your wisdom and your joy. Thank you, Henry. Thank you again for being who you are and for doing what you do.
You too, my sister.
Until next time, everyone, I'm Carmen Milagro, and this is From the Ground Up.